Parshas Toldos. Toldos is always a fun one. And personally, someone who is, at least I try to be somewhat of an analyzer of psychology. So the contrast between Yaakov and Esav is always, to me, very intriguing. I love thinking about Yaakov and Esav and how they're treated and their parenting styles and what that means for them later in life. And this drama, as you could probably guess, actually filters into the rest of Jewish history, right? The fact that Yaakov struggles with Esav leads to his fighting with the angel. That's why we get the name Yisrael. The fact that Yaakov and Esav have this fight is why Leah and Rachel sort of have this sort of sensitivity towards each other to marry yet both Yaakov, which leads to the jealousy of the brothers of Yosef. And literally everything comes from this week's Parsha, when we have Yaakov and Esav being born. And when it comes to twins, so maybe people don't know me that well, but I actually have a twin. He lives in Denver. And we... Yes, yeah. Big time. They have 10 inches. And when it comes to how... Every November, basically, we would always have this discussion subtly, who's Yaakov and who's Esav? And I won't... Obviously, we're both biased towards our own sides, but all I'll say is, he's older and more hairy. That's all I'll say. But when it comes to Toldos, so these two characters, Yaakov and Esav, are such a contrast. They're such a contrast. Even the Torah is clearly trying to give us a contrast. You look at the parsha, so we have Yehiva Toldos, Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram Huli Yitzchak, we're on page 124 in the Art Scroll. Or you can follow along. Did I start from the beginning? No. So you can start in the beginning of the parsha. In 124, we'll pick up in the sources in a second. Ve'ela tolos Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram holides Yitzchak. Very interesting. I could have talked about this also. Who is Yitzchak? Yitzchak represents a very important force in Jewish living, and that is the ability to continue doing the same thing. It's not very easy to continue doing the same thing, but that was Yitzchak's life. The identity of Yitzchak, the toldos of Yitzchak, is that he came from Avram. He was the one that continued what Avram was doing. And that's, you know, it's indicated through a lot of the rest of his life, but we're not going to talk about it much again, much today. But the scene of the wells is later on in the parsha, in the middle of the parsha, is really the only story that we have which is independently about Yitzchak. And even that story talks about how he was redigging the wells of Avram. It's the only story that's strictly about Yitzchak, and it's really just about Yitzchak digging the wells that his father dug. So very interesting, very indicative of who Yitzchak was and who he represents.
Does anyone mention the permission of Avram actually digging wells?
We have Avram by the wells and calling wells certain things. I don't know if we actually have him being chofer wells, but the pasuk says Asher Chafru. I don't recall any. I don't recall any. Nothing explicit. Implicitly, yeah, but not explicitly. So either way, you have Yitzchak ben Arvim Shana Bekach Toas Rivka Bas Pesula Harami Padan Arama Chos Tavan Harami Lo Lisha. Right, we went through the whole story last week about him getting Rivka as a wife and Lavan and that whole scene. Vayetar Yitzchak La Hashem Unochach Ishto. Yitzchak starts to daven across from or adjacent to his wife Rivka, who's here called Ishto, which is interesting. And it says Vayatar Lo Hashem, Rashi points out, that means that Hashem listened to his davening, not to her davening. Rashi has this very, not ambiguous, but puzzling phrase where he says that Hashem listens to the righteous, the child of a righteous, as opposed to the righteous, the child of an evil person, which sounds like the other way around. Someone had to overcome the evil upbringing that she had. Also connects to who Yitzchak was, but not for today. We can talk about it a different time if you want. A very interesting word, grammatically. Grammarians are puzzled by this word too. Vayisro tzitzu. It's not a normal... I don't know what the word is. It's not a normal... it is hitpael. But the question is what the word rotzitzu is. It's from Ratz, but it's not a normal conjugation of the verb. But then some chumashim that you'll find have a patach there. Vayitro tzatzu. Because that's what it would be. That's how it's sometimes written. Although how you pronounce it is a whole other story. But here it's saying that the children are running in her insides, Bekirba. Vatomer im kein lama zeh anochi. She says, well, if this is how it's going to be, why is this for me? What's the point of it? Vatech joshes Hashem. Where did she go? She goes to seek out Hashem. Where does she seek out Hashem? Where?
Yeshiva.
He wants to yeshiva. Yeshiva's Shem Ve'ever, I think Rashi says, right? So she goes to Shem Ve'ever. Vayomer Hashem lah. This is interesting. We have this rabbinic tradition that she goes to Shem Ve'ever, and then Hashem says to her, who's Hashem? She went to seek out Hashem. That meant going to the Beis Medrash. Now Hashem is talking. So what does that mean? The Beis Medrash is talking? Shem is talking? Hashem is talking directly to Rivka? It's not very clear. There are two peoples in your stomach, in your womb. Rashi, by the way, says Aide Shliach. It says Shem through Ruach HaKodesh. But it's not clear in the Pasuk. What's the impetus to reread it that way is unclear. You're going to have two nations that are going to come from your womb and going to split off. They'll both be in one way or another serving each other and become great people. So then they have. Then it comes to actually giving birth. So the word hine here has always troubled me. What does it mean, vihine? Behold, look at that. They're twins. You already knew they were twins. That's what was going to happen before. What does it mean, tomim? Tomim is not the word for twins. What's the word for twins? Taomim. A taom with an aleph in the middle. It's missing an aleph. So I think Chazal point out, maybe Rashi has it all here also. Chaser, uvatamar taomim. When it comes to Tamar, by Yehuda, who are Tamar's twins? Anyone remember? Parrots and?
Zerach,
yeah. Oh. So, at the end of Parshas Vayeshev, I think that's his name, right? I remember exactly, I think that's right. So, what's interesting, I find, is that there are very interesting parallels between Tamar and Rivka. And Rashi pointing one out here that they both had twins. The difference between that, the contrast of the two twins, is number one, Rivka's twins, only one of them was, at least from the outside, a good guy. And for Tamar, even though we don't really know much about Peretz and Zerach, they're in many ways, you know, righteous in their own right. There's nothing that we know about them that's particularly bad. That's what Rashi says, Lefisha Shneim Sadikim. And therefore, it's tomim. Why that means taking away an aleph, I'm not really sure. But the word tomim means twins either way. What's the other, and this is really deep trivia, Reina. What's the other similarity between Rivka and Tamar? There's a similarity and a contrast. Something that from last week's Parsha and something from Tamar. Specific word.
They both involved
with Rivka? You're saying later on. Yeah, you're right. Later on, when she's dealing with her children, that's true. What does it say when Tamar in Vayeshev is actually, and this is one of those things that's sort of like on my back burner to one time make a drasha about. I haven't really delved deep enough into it. Maybe in this class we can get to it, but chances are low, to be honest. So in the page 206 or 8, 208, 210. Right, so the whole thing with Yehuda and Tamar. What is it? Yes. Right, so first, Tamar, she covers her face. So that's the first time when Yehuda is going to have relations with someone. What does it say? In Pasuk Tetvav on 2:10. He thought she was a prostitute. She had covered her face. Rivka also covered her face when she approached Yaakov. But if you look after the scene, what is
it?
When she approached Yitzchak. Yitzchak, sorry. And then if you look at Pasuk Yud Tet, what does it say? Vatakam vatelech. Afterwards, she got up and left. Vatasar tzi'ifa me'aleha. And she took off a scarf. Tzi'if is the only other time we find, I think in the Torah, where we have the word tzi'if, is by Rivka, when Rivka took the tzi'if and covered her face. So both Rivka and Tamar are using a scarf in order to manipulate their face or to cover themselves or to uncover themselves. And they both have twins. Got to work on it. But interesting.
Rivka covered her face in a manner of modesty, or
it's a machlokas among the mefarshim. Did I speak about this on Shabbos? I think I did. Yeah, I did, right?
Because your beauty was so beautiful, it would distract him from his davening.
It was more about reverence that, you know, he's doing something holy. We have to sort of refrain from impinging upon that sanctity or whatever it might be. You know, when we come into shul, we bow down and we give reverence before we engage with Hashem, before we start to daven, we slowly, you know, recognize the weight of what we're about to do. So that's what she was doing. She went to go talk to Yitzchak like a second later. But first she had to cover herself and be a little reverential. Yeah, Viva.
Mm-hmm. So may is like present. They are here.
Okay. Vihine. Okay. Yeah, we have the word hineni. Oftentimes means I am here. I'm present. Vihine is not usually like that. But I hear what you're saying. Vihine tamim bivina. It would work a little better if it said vihine tamim baolam or lifanehem. Here it says, "V'hinei tamim bivitna." Behold, they were twins in her stomach. We already knew they were twins in her stomach, right? Shnei lum bivitnech. It already said that. What's the difference between that and this? I don't know. But you're saying that they're here. Now they're here. Vayetze harishon admon.
She knew it privately, and this is
okay. Public. Maybe other people figured it out now, as opposed to only her. Okay, it's possible. Then you'd have to figure out why is that only the case after Vayim Lu'uyam Al-Aladeh. Maybe she was like very pregnant and it was clear that she was having twins. I don't know.
Maybe it's the first twins ever, yeah.
I don't know. It couldn't be exactly the moment because it still says Bivitna in her stomach, right? So it's not entirely clear when this is. But either way, Vayetze Harishon Admoni Klo Kader Tzayar. The first one comes out Admoni. Reddish. When do we call Esav red?
After
he sells the Bechor. Vayikra Shmo Adom. But he's already red over here. Why didn't we call him red over here?
Here's
that's true too. Oh, good. So here's a mini drasha for you. It's not the hand that you're dealt, it's how you play the hand, right? It's not the cards you're dealt, it's how you play the hand. And he was born red, but we're not going to call him red based on how he's born. He can't affect that. That's for another time also. There's so much here, right? I told you before, there's so much here. Klokader Esav, Eikrishmo Esav. They called him Esav. V'achra Echein Yetzachiv Yadav Chazbakev Esav. His brother came out holding on to his heel. V'eikrishmo Yaakov Yitzchak Ben Shishim Shana Bar Hasam. He was 60 years old. V'igdol Narim. So now the children are growing up. Yeah. David HaMelech was similar to Esav when he came out, right? But I'm not, there's nothing necessarily negative in this pasuk. We haven't seen that yet. The next pasuk is a different story. Vayigdilu ha-na'arim vayhi Esav. The children grow up, or the lads grow up, and Esav was ish yodei atzayed ish sadeh. He's a man. First he's yodei atzayed. What is yodei atzayed? He knows how to trap. A tzad or tzeda is trapping. It's one of the 39 malachos on Shabbos. You can't trap. So number one, he is yodea tzad. He knows how to hunt animals. Number two, he's an ish sadeh. He's a man of the field. Now, if there are two qualities about Esav, it seems like they're saying two different things. So there's got to be something different about ish yodea tzad, right? He has the intellectual capacity to know how to hunt. But he doesn't just draw the diagrams. He's also an ish sadeh. He also goes out into the field and he does it. Right? That's his job. He's not just the manager. He's the actual player. And Vayikra Shemo, he's the Yaakov ish tam. Yaakov, on the other hand, was number one. We have two elements here, two characteristics here too. Yaakov ish tam. What does tam mean?
Simple.
Okay. Usually we use that translation for the Haggadah.
Yeah.
Yaakov ish tam oftentimes means perfect or complete. Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim. That's presumably another characteristic. That he was Yoshev Ohalim. What's interesting about the words Yoshev Ohalim? What do we typically understand Yoshev Ohalim to mean?
Security.
He stood at the gate. No. He was what? No. Close.
He sits and learns.
He sits and learns. Right? He sits and he learns. Rashi tells us Yoshev Ohalim. The top of the second column, Ahalo Shel Shem V'Ahalo Shel Eiver. He also went to the Beis Medrash. He went to Shem's Beis Medrash and went to Eiver's Beis Medrash. Why does Rashi feel the need to say that he went to two different Batei Medrash? Because the word Ohalim. If he went to one, it would be Yoshev Ohel. He went to two. So Rashi says, oh, where do we get two places to learn? Oh, Shem and Eiver. People always say Yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever is one thing. Rashi feels the need to say that no, there were two things because of this pasuk. There are other interpretations of this also. Some explain, I think the Sfarno says that Yoshev Ohalim means the Ohel of Torah and the Ohel of Tzon. He would learn in one of them, and the other one he would take care of the animals. Meaning he did do more than just learn, according to the Sfarno. Everyone knows Rashi, so people just think that Yaakov sat, and learned all the time. As my grandmother would quote her mother, he's just striving tefillin. That's all he's doing. He's just making tefillin all day. He's just, that doesn't do anything. Yeah? Aviva?
But there's
Oh, you're saying sadeh, like the vegetation.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting comparison. I'm not sure. I like that, though. It's a good fodder. Pun intended. Either way. So, and others explain that Yoshev Ohalim means that one was for, I think the Netziv says one is for davening and one's for learning. Right? So he really was very spiritual. He didn't just learn, he also davened. Okay, either way, we have two different, very different children. One is Yodea Tzayed.
He must have done something because when he was later, he was the shep, I mean, he worked for.
Yeah.
You know,
he had to learn a trade.
And he was successful because his spot lens, right, whatever.
Right, exactly. He knew how to deal with the sheep. So at least one way to understand it, if you're going to say like Rashi and like the Netziv, that he just sat and learned and davened, so that he must have developed that when the time came. He was obviously by Lavan for a long time. Otherwise, you can say like the Sfarno, that one was for davening or one was for learning, and one was to cater to the sheep, to care for the sheep, and that's why later on he was able to do it. So you can really take that whichever way you need to. But we have two different children. One is outgoing, one is out there, one is out and about in the fields, and one is very to himself, very introverted. So who loves who? As we know, the story goes, Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav, Kitzayed Befiv, Esav, Yitzchak loved Esav, because Kitzayed Befiv, what does that mean, Tzayed Befiv? Okay, because the game, as they translate it, or the hunted animal, the thing that he trapped, Tzayed Befiv, he would get the meat from the animals that he trapped. What does Rashi say? It wasn't just that. Ketargum Befiv Shel Yitzchak Midrasho, Befiv Shel Esav. It's not Yitzchak's mouth that's enjoying. It's Esav's mouth. What does he do? Tzayid Befiv means trapping with his mouth. Not trapping with his mouth. Tzayid Befiv, that Esav hayetzad oso miramehu bidvarav. That he would trick Yitzchak into thinking he was a good guy. that really he was not so great. But Tzayid Befiv, he would trick Esav, he would trick Yitzchak. And that's why they have Yitzchak as Esav. Why did Yitzchak love Esav? How could Yitzchak love Esav? Don't we know Esav's no good? Oh, ki Tzayid Befiv. Because Esav was very cunning. He was very sly in the way that he would interact with Yitzchak. So that's what it means, ki Tzayid Befiv. Good. Yeah. Chazal tells us that Esav had an outstanding quality of kibra ve'im, that much of us have to aspire to that level. So that's one interpretation. Another interpretation is, no, he wasn't really mechavir ve'im, it was just Tzayid Befiv.
Question.
Yeah.
Supposedly, Avram, I thought also the families kept all the halachas, like kashrus, like
yes.
Shita. So...
Good. Did Esav keep it? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, if he was the hunter and he brought in the game, that doesn't sound like a shechita. I mean, that sounds
so maybe
you know,
he did. I think there's a Rashi on the Parsha somewhere that talks about how he tells Yitzchak that he shechted it and he took I don't know, for other things, he took Meiser and stuff like that. I don't remember exactly where it is.
Is this like for him and for his people, or did Yitzchak...
For Yitzchak.
You know, did Yitzchak and everyone in his family keep all these halachas, the kashrus, the this?
It's not exactly clear.
No,
it's not exactly clear, and it's particularly difficult. Yeah, it's particularly difficult for things that are explicitly non-halachic, right? We know that there's an ister to marry two sisters, and Yaakov does that. So there's got to be some wiggle room. Right, there's got to be something that's not exactly lining up, right? So yes, they kept halachas. The Gemara tells us that in Kiddushin, they might have even kept derabbanans, depending how you understand the Gemara. What exactly that means is difficult to really pin down because of all the things that we've heard about the
Elos. I was thinking if he did, then he was providing sustenance and food. I mean,
yeah,
the big protein
for sure.
You know,
Esav's the one that gave them their meals. So, and that's the sort of the simpler understanding that Rashi brings first. Because the hunt or the game was in his mouth. Which, by the way, even though according to that explanation, that would be consistent with the Ishyo De'atzayid from the pasuk before. But the Midrash is not consistent with the pasuk before. Right? Ishyo De'atzayid means a person that can trap. This next pasuk, according to the Midrash, Rashi says, means that he can trap Yitzchak with his mouth, right? So then they're really two different Yodea Tzayids, right, according to that. Either way, just an interesting thing to point out.
So that seems in contrast to what you just said that about Kibud Avaim. If he's constantly
right, if it's a tricking, it's a hollow Kibud Avaim.
Right.
Some Midrashim, like Rashi says the first time, say that no, he was really giving food to his father. That was what he was trying to do. Yeah, there is a vast academic pursuit to pin down who Esav was. It's not easy. The beginning, the middle, and the end of Esav's life is one big mystery. And right, because where does Esav sort of end up after he passes away?
His head
is in Maras Machpelah. So what does that mean, that his head is in Maras Machpelah and his body is elsewhere? Right. Well, that's practically what happened, but what does that represent? It represents that Esav was a complicated person. In some ways, his what he knew to be right was in line with true values, you know? And the rest of what he did with his body is outside of Maras Machpelah, right? So he's a complicated character, represented by that midrash at the end of his life. V'rivka oheves es Yaakov. So Yitzchak likes Esav because he's got food in his mouth. Rivka likes Yaakov. Why?
Just love him.
Doesn't say it. Doesn't say anything. So that's question number one. Yitzchak's got a reason. Rivka's got no reason. And then we have the whole story with Yaakov and Esav and the lentils, which is, according to the Midrash, based on Avram's death, and they were eating circular things because of the cycle of life, etc. So what is the difference between Yaakov and Esav beyond just their outward, I guess, visible differences in lifestyle, right?
Personalities.
Right. What are their personalities clearly, or at least
values.
Are expressing themselves differently? Their values might be different. We don't really know that yet. It is based on that Rashi and how you're going to understand Sa'ib Afiv. And morals in terms of Yaakov, maybe Yoshev Ohalim is a reference to the fact that he learns Torah. But I really want to focus on this pasuk. Vayehav Yitzchak as Esav ki Tzai b'fiv Rivka oheves as Yaakov. That there's a clear distinction between these two phrases. What's another distinction between the phrases besides the fact that Yitzchak has a reason to love Esav and Rivka doesn't have a reason to love Yaakov? What's another big difference in the structure of the pasuk? Vayehav Yitzchak means what? Yitzchak loved Esav. Verifka Ohevet. What's Ohevet?
Present.
Rivka loves Yaakov. Yitzchak loved Esav. It's very interesting. So let's see some sources. First about their differences. That's why it's past tense. Ye'ahav means future, and when you put a vav in front of it, it makes it past. Right? That's how it works. Vav ha'ipuch. Exactly. That's what Aviva said. So ye'ahav, if it would just say ye'ahav, I mean, he will love Esav, which really doesn't make any sense. But now it's va'ye'ahav, so it makes a little more sense, because now we're narrating what happened. He loved Esav in the past tense. So the Netziv says in source number 2, and we already saw this a little bit, Yodei atzayid latsud anashim b'chalakat l'shono. What's chalaka?
Smooth.
What are some interesting, divergent examples of the use of the word chalaka? Anyone know? Okay, division, interesting. Are you splitting it smoothly? I don't know. What's chalak? Anyone ever heard of chalak meat? Chalak meat means that it's mahadrin. It's the lungs are smooth. There's nothing problematic in the lungs. There's no little divots in the lungs, which is a consideration when you're trying to make kosher meat. It has to be chalak. Mm-hmm. Right? And the knife has to be chalak also. You can't have any divots in the knife. Mm-hmm. What's another example of that for Svardi or for, I don't know if Svardi is the right word. Anyone know how to say an upsharon in Hebrew? No one knows this. A chalaka. You ever heard that before?
No.
A chalaka, when you're smoothing it out their hair. So the chalakat l'shono, very smooth talker, as we say in English. Right? Esav was a smooth talker. He was able to be conniving in some ways. Ish sadeh, askav basadeh. That's where he worked. He worked outside. Ish tam, mutmam im anashim. So says the Netziv that the descriptions of Yaakov and of Esav and then Yaakov are actually meant to parallel each other in both situations. What does it mean that Esav was Yodei Atzayid? He was tricking other people. He was a smooth talker with other people, very cunning, right? And what does it mean, Ish Tam for Yaakov? That's the parallel. That he was Mutmam Im Anashim. He was transferred. Masha Befiv Kach Belibo. Whatever he thought in his heart is what he said outside. Right? This is what his children end up getting somewhat praised for when it comes to Yosef, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Lo yachlu dabro lo shalom. That the brothers couldn't say anything nice to Yosef. So Yaakov says, mitoch, you know, genusam shvacham. That through their bad traits, you can see their good traits. That it's true, they weren't treating Yosef nicely, but at least they weren't faking it. They didn't like hate him inside and then say that they loved him outside. They told him like it was. They wore their emotions on their sleeves, right? So here, Yaakov is really, you know, the genetic predisposition of that character trait. Mutmami manashim, that he was always very forthright with other people. Masha b'piv kapal libo. He was not Yodei Atzayid. He didn't trick other people when he spoke to them. Im kem hu tamim eno nechlak l'shnayim omer kach uva libo kach. He doesn't bring it. He doesn't switch and say one thing in his heart and one thing in his mouth. And then what? Filter is different in terms of what you say and what you don't say. But at least when he would speak truth. He wouldn't trick people. Yoshev Ohalim, and this, as you see from the Netziv's phrasing, is the same way he starts off understanding Ish Sadeh, right? Askav Basadeh for Esav. Yoshev Ohalim, Askav Babayit. That he spent time in the home. Umuvan Shehema Ohal Toru Tfila. And it makes sense. And it's understood that these were the ohalim of Torah and tefillah, as we said before. The Chizkuni points out the nuance that we mentioned before. When it comes to Yitzchak, he loved Esav in the past. Yitzchak didn't love Esav all the time. He loved it sometimes. Ela ba'otos man. In that one time, ki tzayid befiv. How do you translate the word ki in that syntax? When, exactly. When he gave him food. When there was food in his mouth, Yitzchak's like, yeah, this guy's not so bad. And then he finished benching, and he's, oh, that Esav guy. My son, what are we going to do with Esav? Right? So that's how you understand the word ki is sort of the pivot of the entire pasuk. Vayav Yitzchak es Esav. When did Yitzchak love Esav? Ki tzayid befiv. When the game was in his mouth. Rashi had said ki tzayid befiv means because he was always tricking him, or because he always gave him food. It's not because, it's when. So that's the Chizkuni. It's dependent on the food. That Rivka loved Yaakov all the time. But he talks about something else. It could be that.
Very problematic.
For what?
Well, you know, first of all, why the sentences in the Torah at all?
That's interesting. I like that question. That's a very provocative question. Why did the Torah feel the need to tell us who loved who?
And then certainly to say that Yitzchak loved him because he brought him food sometimes.
Right, right.
It's very problematic.
It is interesting.
And almost seems to set them up for what happens in the future.
If we're going to be very literal, it's pretty parv, right? If we're going to assume that tzayid befiv means that he's giving him food, so that's possibly a positive, right?
Yeah, but still, you love your child because he gives you food.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, so good.
Well, when you're looking for good things, you know.
I guess.
That's all I got.
Wow. But everyone asks you today, why do you love your children? Food would not be number
right,
one
right.
on the list. Right.
One of those difficult kids
yeah.
who are
right.
hard to like.
My father's a basketball coach. When he when someone would ask him, is this player a good player? My dad would say, he's good at setting screens. He's good at standing in a spot so the top medals could go around him. Yeah, Aviva. Yeah. Yeah. What Adina is saying is not that it's not generic. Meaning you could understand it as generic, but even within its generality, even within ki tzayid befiv, it's giving a reason for it. Meaning, if I were to say that your children are good to you, that you love your children because they're good to you, so that even though it's general, would still be a little bit of a limitation. Meaning, you don't love them because they're your children. You love them only because they're doing good things for you, right? You know what I'm saying? So even if it was a generality, it would still be a limitation. But yeah, it could be understood as more of a general praise of Esav, not just a specific. But even within that, Adina, I think Adina's point stands that it's somewhat of a limiting description of Esav. And the question still remains: why does the Torah feel the need to tell us it? What do we need to know this for?
It's a difference. Conditional.
Right.
Off, and Rifkus is unconditional, but it's, even if it doesn't say the reason, she
right. Good. Her. Good. So your point is that the Torah is teaching us a message, teaching us a lesson. Okay. So we're gonna extend that a little bit. Yeah, Aviva.
That probably is a source for the Midrashim and the commentaries that say that he tried to find the good in him, even though Esav had a lot of negatives.
Right. That's what Rose was saying. Yeah. That you know, it pointed this out in order to teach us that Yitzchak was trying to see the good in Esav. That's what you mean, yeah. I don't know if anyone's familiar with this, but Rav Shimshon Mefrol Hirsch has a blockbuster commentary on the upbringing of Yaakov and Esav. Really, in some ways, some people will find it difficult, but he says that there's part of the blame for how Esav ends up is that they were trying to raise both Yaakov and Esav in the same way. And there's and we're only seeing the tail end of some of that here, but in many ways, the commentary is right before this. I encourage people to read it, because it's very insightful in some ways, as he always is. But He talks about the importance of chanoch l'nar al pi darko, that each person is different, and you have to cater to their different skill set and bringing them up differently. But Rav Hirsch says the following when it comes to the reasons why Yitzchak loved Esav and Rivka loved Yaakov. A second factor, which should only have a pernicious effect, was the difference of the feelings of the parents towards the children. Unity and complete agreement of parents in the education, and the same feelings and love to all their children, even to those who are not so good. Yeah, I don't know what that means. I don't know. Just those require most of all, even more than those who are physically weak or ill, loving care and consideration and sacrifice. That is the first fundamental condition and the cornerstone of every education. That Isaac's sympathies were more inclined towards Esav. Rebecca's to Jacob can moreover easily be explained by the attraction of opposites. So first of all, he's in some ways subtly criticizing them that they even, as Adina said, were pointing to one child over the other. Right, you know, my wife said that when she was growing up, they used to read the book called "I Love You, the Purplest." People know that book? Which child do you love more? It's not about more. I love you this way, I love you that way. I love different kids different ways, but it doesn't mean more or less. It just means I love you differently. So here, he's saying the fact that they each had one child that they gravitated towards more is itself the problem. But then he explains, why did they gravitate towards each of them separately? Because of the attraction of opposites, we see Isaac risen up again from death on the altar, preferring to withdraw from the bustle of the world and to live quietly in the proximity of the desert, living at the well of Be'er Lachai Ro'i, live one who seeth me, away from the busy traffic of men. He wants to live just with Hashem, a lonely man of faith. I want to be away from people. That Esav's lusty, active nature appealed to him, and that he perhaps saw in him a force which he had lost could be a support to the home, would be quite possible. Meaning, why did Yitzchak love Esav? He saw him as his completion. He saw him as the complement to who he once was. That was opposed to Esav. Yitzchak was once similar to Esav. Yitzchak was once Avram's child, the one that would go out and do things, the one that would be very active. After the Akedah, he sort of retreats. He becomes more introspective. He becomes more of a homebody. And he sees Esav as the person that can bring back those qualities that he once had. Rebecca, on the other hand, saw in Jacob's whole being a picture of a life unfolding of which in her father's house she had never had the remotest idea. The sympathies are explainable, but parents should not allow such hidden feelings to influence them in making any difference in their love towards their children. Very harsh words from Rav Hirsch. Very harsh words. You can look at the rest of the piece. But what he's saying is the reason that they gravitated towards each of these children is because that they were missing those pieces in their life. Rivka came from a household of trickery. She came from a household of people that were conniving. So she gravitated towards Yaakov, who was an Ish Tam, as the Netziv said, very simple, very clear with people what exactly he meant, what he felt. Yitzchak, on the other hand, appreciated Esav more because of the elements of his own life that he was missing. The Kli Yakar points out that what we were talking about before. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav kitzayid b'fiv, lefi k'shehaya sho'alo aviv ma'ata oseh basada kol hayom, he would say, I'm making, you know, dinner, or I'm bringing you food. Rivka. Why didn't Rivka love Esav? Because he wasn't in the house. He wasn't around. He didn't do the chores. He didn't do his laundry. He didn't do, I don't know what it was. He wasn't around his mother. He was always out in the field. Yitzchak could appreciate that because he brought home food, right? And that was the man's job. Rivka, on the other hand, wanted to see her child a little more. What does it mean? She loved Yaakov in the present tense? He was always there. Maybe if, and this is interesting, this is sort of a different spin on it. Yitzchak's love for Esav was dependent on when he was bringing him food, when he came back home. When he wasn't home, so it was hard. It was harder to love him because he just wasn't around. Rivka oheves. Rivka loves him in the present tense. Why? Because he's right there all the time. He can constantly be loving him. Shaymatzo etzel ima v'chol ga'agueha alav. She was always thinking about him. worrying about him, missing him. Specifically, as the Chizkuni had pointed out, specifically at a time when Esau was around, that's when they loved him. After they ate from the meat, batal davar, batal ahava. When the reason for why they loved him was gone, they no longer loved him. Aval Rivka ohevet Yaakov al lo davar. Rivka loved Yaakov for nothing. V'yahava kazu einana betela. That kind of love is never going to lose. And this is a Mishnah in Avos, which we find in the fifth parak. Kol ahava shehi teluya bedavar. Every love which is dependent on something, batal davar betela hava. That if you lose that thing, that condition, that dependency, whatever you're dependent on, so then the love is also going to be lost. But something which is unconditional will never be lost. What is Ezo hi ava atzuliya b'davar? Zu avas Amnon v'tamar. Okay, an interesting example. V'she'enu atzuliya b'davar zu avas David v'yohonasan. Their love was unconditional, as you can learn in the Navi. So this concept, given over, sort of implied by the Kli Yakar, and as we discussed before, as Sarita had pointed out before, that the past tense and the present tense is not only an issue of what's going on at that moment, but it's actually what's going on in terms of the quality of the love. The love was conditional based on what they would get, or was unconditional based on who they were. And this is also brought down clearly in the Shla, the Shnei Luchos Habris. Ahavaso sheyitzach le'esav ha'isarak ahavat tuliba davar, mishum tzai b'fiv. V'im kein, harei yivatel davar b'tel ahava, k'shemit bateles. Siva ahava miyad ahava hofeches l'nachlas ha'avar. The love clearly changes over to the boundaries of the past. L'fikach ne'amar v'ayeha v'lashon Avar. So this is a copy and paste from a PDF, so it's not exact. B'lashon Avar, Shekein Ahava, so Rak Ba'avar, Kasher Haya Natsi B'fiv. Me'idach, Rivka Havas Ahava, as Yaakov, Ahava She'ena Tuliya B'davar, She'enena B'tela L'olam, sorry. Ulefikach Ne'mar Etzla Rivka Oheves, B'lashon Hove, Hanesina Oheves Oso. No, that's not the word. Hove havayasa ohevasoso, maybe just his existence is what she loves. Tamid ahava bilti mugbeles, doesn't have any boundaries. Shekein halohais atulia basibos gashmios kilashahein. So adkan, we've seen what this pasuk represents. It doesn't only represent a difference between who the parents love, it also represents a difference between the quality of love. That Yitzchak's love of Esav was conditional, and Rivka's love of Yaakov was unconditional. But I think if we can extrapolate from this a little bit more, not in terms of Yitzchak and Rivka, but also more in terms of Esav and Yaakov, we can actually understand a little bit more about how they saw themselves in life. Now, as we saw earlier, so the pasuk already tells us a little bit about who they are. Vayigdelu hanarim, vayhi Esav ish yodei atzayid. Right? Esav defined himself as someone who knew how to hunt, right? Vayehi Esav, he was this. This is who he was. Ish yodei atzayid. V'Yaakov, what was Yaakov? Pretty simple. Tam. Doesn't really tell us what he did, right? Esav's definition was much more explicit in terms of his actions. Yodei atzayid, he knows how to hunt. Yaakov, just ish tam, just a simple guy. There's nothing about him necessarily that's defined by any specific activity. Aviv, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, it's sort of interesting that in the end, what happens to Yaakov is that he's not good, and Rivka doesn't have him there.
Right, yeah. It's sort of a contrast based on the Kli Yakar about who was present. Esav stuck around for a lot longer than Yaakov. Well, not maybe a lot longer, but yeah, Yaakov had to leave and he was no longer present. It's interesting, yeah. I will say there are divergent midrashim about that scene also later in the parsha where he's tricking his mother, who is tricking his father, whether or not he was punished by that. Another interesting parallel for everyone to notice, that What does Yaakov put on himself? Skin of an animal, right? And what happens later on to Yaakov? He is a shepherd. What happens? What's the most difficult point in Yaakov's life? Yosef's gone. What happened? How does he find out that Yosef's gone? The skin of the animal. The brothers shecht the animal, gedi izim, put it on the cloak and bring it back to him. So the Medrash points this parallel out and says that one is based on the other. That this was in some ways in reimbursement of what he did to his father. It's the same thing that he tricked his father with an animal skin. His sons are going to trick their father with an animal skin. It's an interesting parallel. We can talk about it a different time also. Yeah, it's true. But yeah, you're right. Ein shliach l'dvar avera, as we say. But there is a certain element that falls on Rivka too. And it's a halachic sugya. How could he listen to his father over his mother? The Gemara in Kedushin talks about when your father and your mother both tell you something. So then, who do you listen to? You're supposed to listen to your father, actually.
His father,
huh? Well, going with his father, going with his mother. Right? Clearly, his father didn't want him to be tricked. There's an implicit lack of kibud av v'aim there. So there's a whole sugya there. Technically, you're supposed to follow the father. But there might have been a distinction. Either way, if all else is being equal, so the Gemara tells us, Gemara actually says, what makes it equal is that if the parents get divorced, let's say the parents get divorced, the reason that you would follow the father is because the woman is also responsible to cater to the father's needs also sometimes, so therefore you have to follow the father because you're both in some ways connected to the father. But let's say they're divorced and the woman has no responsibilities to the father. So then they both ask you for a cup of water. What should you do? Anyone know this Gemara? It's a funny Gemara. And it's a joke, but some Achronim take it seriously. The Gemara says, put the water in the middle and crow like a chicken. That's what it says. Okay. It's unclear what it means. The Gemara is not clear what it means. It basically says, I can't decide between my father and my mother. Either means first come, first serve.
There's one cup.
And there's only one cup. Yeah. It's a theoretical gymnastic Gemara. It's not really it's not a practical Gemara, hopefully. Either it means, first come, first serve. I'm not allowed to choose. Or it means, here it's for both of you. You're chickening out, right, in English also. But the Mefarshim talk about what's the symbolism of a chicken and how that represents the difference between the different views of that Gemara. But either way. So it is an interesting, this whole dynamic comes about and has to be applied to what happens later in the parsha too. But what I was saying before is that Esav is defined by his activity, right? Esav is Yodea, Vahi Esav Ish Yodea Tzayid Ish Sadeh. That's how Esav was defined. That's who he was. He was a person that hunted. And therefore, when it comes to loving Esav, how are you going to love a person? You're going to love a person based on how they present themselves. When Esav came before Yitzhak and Rivka, so his presentation was, I'm a hunter. Vahi Esav Ish Yodea Tzayid. That's how he looked at himself. That's how he presented. That's what his life was all about, right?
He wasn't very lovable.
Was right? Well, or his lovable had limitations. His lovability had boundaries because that's how he presented himself. He wasn't presenting himself based on a relationship that was a sincere commitment to another person. He was just basing, his relationships were based on what he provided. He was a Yudea Tzayed. When it comes to Yaakov, Ish Tam Yoshev Olim, what did he do? We don't know. It was his presence. He was just there. Ish tam yoshev olim. It was his presence in the home, which is how he defined himself. In other words, how he had relationships with other people. Yodea, he wasn't a yodea tzayid. There wasn't any specific activity that he did that endeared himself to other people. It was the fact that he was yoshev olim that endeared himself to other people. So when the next pasuk then says, Vayehav Yitzhak as Esav ki tzayid b'fiv, it's not simply saying Yitzhak and Rivka are looking at their two sons saying, which one am I going to choose? Am I going to choose this guy or am I going to choose this guy? But it's telling us that they were loving their children based on their presentation of themselves. That when Yitzhak looked at Esav, he said, what are you giving me? You're giving me tzayid? So fine, I'll love you for your tzayid. I'm going to love you based on what you want to be defined at. So Esav was a Yodea Tzayid. He was a hunter. So in reciprocation, That's how Yitzchak's love manifested itself towards Esav. Because that's what Esav wanted to be. Right? Every parent wants to support their child in their life endeavors. So if your child wants to be a lawyer, so you love him for being a lawyer. And that's how he defines himself. This is what I do. I wake up in the morning, I go to my work, I go to sleep late at night, I'm thinking about my work, I'm always working. So then my only connection to you is that your work. The only way that I can connect to our relationship is through whatever you do all day. That's what Esav was. He was a Yodea Tzad Ish Sadeh. He never was in the house. He was never building a relationship. He was always out in the field. So when Yitzhak is supposed to relate to his son, what is Yitzhak's relationship with him about? Only Ki Tzayi Befiv. It's only when he came home, when he came and gave him food, that's when he loved him. Because otherwise, he had no relationship with him. Esav defined himself by his activities. Yaakov, on the other hand, was an ish tam, simple man. There was nothing that particularly drew him in terms of, you know, a vocation, in terms of a hobby, in terms of an activity. And that's why Rivka Ohevez as Yaakov. He was a Yoshev Ohal, and he stayed in the house. He built relationships with his family members. And therefore, when it came to loving him, it was much easier or much more or limitless, the love and the connection between him and his mother, at least. Interesting, it doesn't say about the other ones, right? It doesn't say the vice versa or anything like that. It's weird. Yes, I don't know. It's unclear. We got a little bit of an inkling later in the Parsha when we have the brachos of such a situation. And Yitzchak's response to Esav about the fact that he gave brachos to Yaakov, it wasn't exactly negative from Yitzchak, right? Right? Yitzchak didn't say, like, go get him. Right? Yitzchak didn't say, oh, he shouldn't have had those brachos. And he sort of, at the end of the Parsha, we're not going to go into it. It seemed like he was okay with it, right? Yeah, he's Gam Hu Yivorach, is that the Pasuk? He's also going to be blessed. Or no, maybe that might be Yaakov later on with Ephraim and Menashe. But either way, we don't see any outburst from Yitzchak over the fact that he gave brachos to Yaakov. But either, you know, it's not really here nor there necessarily, but we see that we don't have much in terms of the relationship between Yitzchak and Yaakov, except for the fact that Yaakov tricked him and Yitzchak didn't care that much. But what I think is interesting when we view it in this framework, that Yitzchak's love of Esav is based on the presentation of Esav's life, or how Esav defined himself. And Rivka's love of Yaakov was how he presented himself. We actually come to a much greater understanding about Esav and Yaakov as personas, and much less about relationships, who loved who. I saw once Rabbi Frand. Rabbi Secha Frand comes here every couple years. He was here this past year before Rosh Hashanah to talk at the Kollel. And I saw once he wrote that, you know, we ask kids a lot of times when they're younger, we say, what do you want to be when you grow up? Right? You've heard that question. What do you want to be when you grow up? And what's the answer for an ex-Jewish boy?
A doctor.
A doctor, a lawyer, an accountant. Right? If they're a little younger, maybe a baseball player or a fireman, you know, a policeman, whatever. So what's interesting about that question and answer?
It's ridiculous.
So first of all, there's an incongruency between the question and what's answered. What was the question? The question is, what do you want to be when you grow up? What does it mean, what do you want to be? What kind of person do you want to be? Right?
Not
what you want to do. We didn't ask you, what do you want to do when you grow up? But every answer is always, what I want to do. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a baseball player. Those are all activities. That's not who you want to be. So for one reason or another, the parlance has developed that what do you want to be means what job do you want to do. But it really should be the opposite. That we should define ourselves by who we want to be, not by what we want to do. And that's exactly the difference between Esav and Yaakov. Esav was an ish yodei tzayed. How did he define himself? Based on what he did. What do I do when I get up in the morning? What work am I going to do? You know, what does Bubby say to her friends when they're talking about their grandchildren? Oh, my grandson, he's a doctor, and he's making a lot of money, and he's working in New York City. Well, what about his yasharness? What about his honesty? What about his integrity? What about his relationships? Like, why don't Bubbies talk about that? Why don't we talk about the character of the people as opposed to the activities of people? So when it came to Yitzchak and relating to Esav, he related to him based on his activities, because that's who Esav was. Esav was, in the modern parlance, a person that was always building his resume. Who am I? Whatever I can write on my resume. I got this much, you know, I did this well in school. This was my grade point average. This was my first job. This was my second job. He was basically a person of activities, of accomplishments. And when you're a person of accomplishments, you're only as good as what you're doing in that moment. Everything else is past tense. Vayehav Yitzhak Kisai Befiv, he was defined by his activities, and therefore his love was in the past tense. Whenever there was something that could be loved, he loved him, and then afterwards there was nothing. When you're in a good job, so you stay good at that job until you're done with that job, and then it's in the past. Yaakov wasn't a resume builder. You know, I think it's Arthur Brooks. People know Arthur Brooks, writer. I think he coined the phrases the character ethic versus the eulogy traits. Any people familiar with this? I forgot what he calls it, a little bit something else, a little bit different. I think he got it from Rav Soloveitchik, I think. The difference between the
is it David Brooks?
David Brooks. Who's Arthur Brooks? David Brooks. That's who, the writer for recently.
New York Times.
Oh, they're brothers? You don't know. I think it was David Brooks. The eulogy traits versus the character traits. Versus the, I don't know, the resume traits, something like that. Resume traits versus eulogy traits. That when you added someone's eulogy, right, and they're talking about a person, so what do they talk about? They don't talk about their law degree. They don't talk about, you know, their clients. They don't talk about the big, you know, court case that they won. They talk about who they were as a person, how nice they were to other people, how honest they were, you know, how they brought their children up. Like, those are eulogy traits. Eulogy traits meaning things that we should always be living with, not just when we die. But the difference between, and that was Yaakov. Yaakov was someone who was living his life as an ish tam yosheva halim. He was building relationships with people. For him, he defined himself as how he related to others, what he did in the home. There wasn't any specific activity that he was basing his love on, right? There was nothing that dependent that was driving him in his activity that defined his relationships. This is the difference between Esav and Yaakov. And this is the difference between the love that you can see between Yitzchak and Rivka for their children. That Yitzchak's love for Esav manifested itself through his own activities. Because that's how he defined himself through his resume traits. He was defined by his activities. Rivka ohavas es Yaakov because of who he was as a person. That's who he was. That's who you want to be. Not just what you want to do. And that's the difference between Yaakov and Esav. That's the difference between the love that we see from Yitzhak and the love that we see from Rivka. And it's obviously something that we can always... And, you know, there are some times where, you know, I find that modern-day, I guess, novelties are actually unique, right? Meaning that there are elements of the human psyche which have developed based on modern, situations that are different from times before. This is one of those situations. This is one of those, concepts which is throughout all of human history. It's a universal trait that there are people that define themselves based on who they are, and there are people that define themselves based on what they do. And it might manifest itself more nowadays because we have the resume culture and we have social media, which is all about showing people what you do. You can't show someone your honesty on social media, right? You can show them what restaurant you're going to. You can show them, you know, what vacation you're taking. But you can't show them who you are as a person. You can intuit based on where they're going on vacation. But, overall, modern day is expressive of this distinction more. But it's not something that was only that's exacerbated in our culture, I don't think. It's something that's always at the heart of the human condition, whether or not we're going to be people that define ourselves by who we are, or whether or not we're going to be people that define ourselves by what we do. And that's at the core of the difference between Esav and Yaakov, and the core of the difference between Yitzhak's love and Rivka's love. A little bit different way to understand the two characters, but really a very important way to understand the two characters as we move forward in the next few parshios, which we'll learn much more about them. Okay, everyone should have a good week. Shkaya.